Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
It's the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I am your host, Joe Tumalo. This is a podcast that we develop to help the fundraising community with ideas, get you thinking in a different way, and provide really practical, tactical things that you can apply right away to your work. My guest today is a longtime friend, Brian Saber from Jersey. Welcome, Brian.
Hello, Joe.
Fellow Northeastern, always a pleasure. And Brian has been, you're an old man. You've been doing a lot of things for a long time.
It takes one to know one.
And developed one of my favorite, what would you call asking
tools?
Matters? Tools, thank you. Tools, and not only look at it much more than a tool. It had a huge impact on the way I, not just fundraising, but in personal life as well. And that's the asking matters. And you'll do a better job of explaining it. But to me, asking matters looks at our own style and personality. We can read a fundraising book or a sales book, which I've read many over the years. And it's like, well, that doesn't feel right to me. That's just not my personality. I can't say that. It works for somebody else. Clearly, they're raising a lot of money, but it's just not right for me. And so it looks at your personality in a very simple way. Mm-hmm. I've looked at Myers-Briggs and DISC and Structogram, all those personality profile tests and models, right? But they always seem so complicated. And it's like, I don't have time. I want to be present with a donor. I don't want to be thinking about, are they an I? Are they a D? Are they a S, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate that. Yeah. I think one of the great strengths of the asking styles is that they are in a way simple. They're simple to understand and you can see yourself in them and remember them. First of all, it's not all of these various letters and combinations and such. These are names, right? Rainmaker, go-getter, kindred spirit, mission controller. And we have these icons, these cute icons that go with them. And in no way am I trying to minimize the impact of it, but I think in the simplicity is the strength that you can say to yourself, yes, that's what I am. And now I totally get why I do it this way and why it's okay to do it this way. And once you have that aha moment, as so many people call them, these aha moments, it opens a whole bunch of doors to you. And the whole point is to be more comfortable and therefore more effective as a fundraiser. Because for most people, this is not a comfortable area. It's something we do because we want to make a difference and we know we have to do this to make the difference. We have to be honest with ourselves that most people out there fundraising aren't doing the one thing in their lives they just had to do from the moment they were born. They're doing the thing that will make a difference, make an impact in society, because that's what they want to do as people, make an impact in society. So we have to be honest about that and find a way to meet people halfway. And I think the asking styles do that.
So I didn't do as good of a job describing it as you will. So just to put it in context, so can you define asking styles?
Yes. So the asking styles are based on two personality traits, how we think and how we communicate and interact. So we have analytic versus intuitive, and we have extroverted versus introverted. So you're either an analytic extrovert, an analytic introvert, etc. And we have a primary and a secondary because no one fits cleanly in one box. So you've got something that dominates. For me, it's my introversion. So I'm a little bit more balanced between the analytic and the intuitive, meaning I can be a numbers guy and I can be a touchy-feely stories guy than I am between extrovert and introversion. I'm a pure introvert. And what's fascinating is the introvert extrovert is the one that really intrigues everyone, that dichotomy, because it's just so evident in the way we lead our lives, or people think it is. And people are always saying, you're not an introvert, because people think you have to be a hermit to be an introvert. And forever I've said, I am an introvert. They say, no, you're not. Look at you. You're standing in front of a room. You're doing this. You're doing that. You're articulate. And I've said, it takes a lot of my energy. Mm-hmm. Being an introvert doesn't mean I don't like people and don't want to interact, but it takes energy. And that has been proven in this pandemic. I live alone. I have spent virtually every minute of every day by myself now for a month plus. 5 weeks, 6 weeks, I don't even know how long. I'm okay. And I actually have more energy now than I ever had. And it's because I am not using that energy to interact as much. It's the hugest aha moment for me personally. And it came about 2 weeks ago as I even stopped. I was taking a couple of walks with a friend or two. And I stopped those, and because I realized how much I had to give to those, and I thought, I'm going to make this a meditative process. So not to get off on a tangent, but to say that is a really important dichotomy and really impacts the way we fundraise. You can be a very effective fundraiser as an introvert. There are skills one would bring that an extrovert doesn't bring, like listening skills. The introvert is generally a much better listener, and so that's really what people take away more than the analytic versus intuitive, which comes into play when you're talking about your story and how you're going to talk about your organization and what excites you about it. For everyone who wants outcomes measurements, there's someone who wants to hear the story of one person who's been impacted by the program. So that's the asking styles, these two personality traits, how they intersect, where on this sort of spectrum or chart you are.
And so there are four styles then.
Yes.
Right? Can you quickly, test my memory here. I am a go-getter.
Yes.
Which is extroverted, intuitive.
Correct.
Right. I have energy. I feed off of other people. I, on the other hand, in contrast to you, am going stir crazy with the, my wife works from home and I find myself when I'm out in the neighborhood or anywhere and even a stranger, I'm like, hi, how are you? Can I talk to you for 10 minutes? Right. So I feed off of that. And then as an intuitive, I have to work a lot harder on the details. And I'm not as analytic and I'm more of just like, boom, make a decision. Let's go. I used to work with my brother who is the opposite, introverted,
analytic controller. Mm-hmm.
And before I knew all this, it would drive me crazy, right? I'm going, make a decision. Let's go. Hurry up. What are you waiting for? Come on. Go, just do it. It's not rocket surgery, as I like to say, just do it. But then as I get older and wiser, hopefully I realize I need people like that. Right. I know I'm getting off a little on track, but I'm saying this because there's so much more. This goes beyond fundraising.
Yes, absolutely.
It really opened my eyes to say, no, I need people. I need the analytics because they're going to say, Joe, did you think about this before you rush into this? Or before you send that proposal out to the customer, did you really look at it carefully? So I got out of this was celebrate and leverage the differences, especially when you're working in teams. I got a little off track there.
No, well, it all circles back around. It makes a lot of sense because one of the many benefits of the asking styles is that it then gives you a roadmap to working with others. Hmm. I'm a massive fan of partnering to ask whenever it's appropriate for two people to go together to solicit a person, a couple, a family, whatever it is. And once you know your styles, let's say you've got someone you know you're partnering with and you can say, oh yeah, Joe, okay, you're the extroverted intuitive and we're going to see an intuitive. So you tell the story and whatever. And I'll depend on my secondary mission controller to keep us organized and on track and to watch because it's hard to be doing the talking and watch the meeting objectively. So often I would partner with a go-getter and an extrovert, and I could see where the meeting was headed. I could watch the donor's reactions in a different way and move the meeting along. So very helpful and helpful for me in appreciating the other people on my team appreciating the other people in the office, appreciating board members, and beyond fundraising, just in life to understand better. And I will share an anecdote, since you have this go-getter, mission controller, dichotomy, not to use that word too many times, with your brother. My co-founder, Andrea Kielstead, is a go-getter, and her husband's a mission controller. And the styles, for, as well for her, really taught her how to work more productively with her husband, who was going to methodically and in a very detailed way and in a quiet way go through life, and had all those years. So, and what's great is it takes 3 minutes to find your style. It's this quick true false yes no assessment, and then you've got that as a tool in your toolkit, and there are so many rich discussions you can have at a board meeting, and so many ways you can now figure out how to complement yourself so that you have all the strengths represented, because no one has them all. And I think the styles underscore that the natural, I hate to use the word salesman type, but that type, that very driven, extroverted, focused person can be successful, but can also be short on process and isn't right for everyone. No one has it all. So don't worry about not having it all.
Wonderful. And so just to finish the asking styles going clockwise, then we have kindred spirit.
So it's rainmaker, go-getter, kindred spirit. I always go clockwise from top left.
System, so.
Yes, it's just where we started. And I thought if I always do that, it'll stay clear. So rainmaker, top left, analytic extrovert. The naturals, the person everyone thinks is the natural salesperson, goal-oriented, driven, very focused and fact-oriented. You, the go-getter, the intuitive extrovert, who's a big picture thinker, lots of energy, just goes for it, brings people along with their energy, loves meeting new people. The kindred spirit, the intuitive introvert, very feelings oriented, wears their heart on their sleeve, very caring and attentive to others. And then the mission controller, the analytic introvert, the Eagle Scout who always gets the job done, dots their I's, crosses their T's, and is the best listener of all. So those are the four in a starting clockwise top left.
Very cool. And you alluded to it. People can find out their style online at askingmatters.com/.
Right. Well, just go to askingmatters.com and you'll see the button in the top right corner that says find your asking style. And you can't miss it on the homepage. So that's the easiest way to get there, askingmatters.com. It takes a couple of minutes and you'll get an immediate result on the screen. And it'll be a primary and a secondary result. So it'll say you're primarily a go-getter, secondarily you're a rainmaker, so your extroversion predominates, or you're a go-getter and kindred spirit, so your intuitive side predominates. And with some tips as to how to use that.
Yeah. And what you and I have had some discussion over this over the years, as far as I go back to, remember the Gallup organization did that Strength Finder book? Is that something you're familiar with?
Oh, it's ringing a bell. Yes.
Yeah, it's decades ago, probably. But the whole point was, well, the big takeaway for me, I think it was called Strength Finder. So figure out what your strengths are, and then focus on your strengths and work on your strengths, and just manage your weaknesses.
Yeah.
Right. So like, when I first learned that, I'm like, wow. Yeah. I mean, all those years in school, I was not good at math or science. And it was like, I would beat myself up over it and try harder and harder. And then, I mean, you don't, obviously at that age, you don't know, you don't have all this knowledge, data, but it was like, shit. Yeah. I just should have done enough and not get hung up and beat myself up over it and focus on what I'm really good at. Right.
For 25 years, I was a fundraiser in nonprofits. Either the head of fundraising or the executive director. I walked the walk, I talked the talk, whatever the expression is, I did all of it. I, and I, my bosses, whether they were my executive directors or my board, were always really happy with my fundraising. And I always felt a bit like a fake because I hate special events. I really dislike the phone, talking on the phone. Even with friends, sometimes I'm anxious at the thought of calling them. And I don't like meeting new people. And a funny joke, because I've been walking, I walk every day. I've really become this big walker since the pandemic. And I wave to people, but I never engage someone in a conversation. And I don't have a desire to. So people, what do you mean you're a fundraiser and you don't like meeting new people? I said, I don't. I never did. But once I've met someone and that comfort is established and I have a sense of where they're coming from, I can build a great relationship. And so, okay, I'm not the one to go out and meet the new person. Someone else can do that. But until building the asking styles, I never thought I was a good fundraiser. So now I appreciate what I did and I see my path, because once, when I moved back to New York, I worked for a snazzy organization that had the most glamorous gala. I won't name the organization, but fancy, 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 with A-list people on the committee and world-famous people being honored. I mean, world-famous, like the likes of, you know, Hillary Clinton and such. And I hated that event and having to put it on and be there and all that stuff. And if you look at, and I only stayed a year, if you look at the organizations where I had long tenures, fascinatingly, none of them had a major gala. None of them raised money that way. And if they didn't when I got there, they certainly didn't when I left, because being in charge of fundraising, I didn't build those because I couldn't stand them. Now, am I saying they couldn't have been helpful? Maybe. But they weren't in my wheelhouse. I was in charge. Most of my organizations were small, so it was just me, and so they didn't happen. But you know what? It was okay, because I built the major gift program, which, as we know, is a longer road to success anyway. So it just so happened that my strengths turned out to be really great strengths for fundraising and for my organizations. So yeah, one aha moment after another, like you had with that book.
What is it? I believe Socrates once said, you know, I'm such an intellect here.
Well, and you're older. I don't remember him.
That, what did Socrates say? He said a lot of stuff.
I don't know. I never met him.
It went down to him. Oh, to know others. To know others, first know thyself.
Ah.
Right? Mm. I think it was.
To thine own self be true. And that's another
point. Same thing. That might be different.
No, it's different. I think that's biblical.
But right. So first figure out your asking style and learn more. Like I said, it has helped me in all areas of my life. And I really encourage our listeners to take the test, askingmatters.com, to share it with, as you say, with leadership and board members, and then start to look, be conscious of, have your big antenna up when you're dealing with donors. Right, clearly. I mean, there's some that are just so obvious. I have a donor, a planned giving donor, who is a financial advisor, always very short on the phone. I know not to, no small talk. He wants to see the numbers, the reports, the impact reports, doesn't care about stories. Just give me the facts and I'll send you, and he sends big checks. He's a planned giving donor, but he also sends really nice major gift checks. And so I recognize that right away. It's like, no touchy-feely. Even though it's harder for me, I have to figure out how to be more analytic and detailed with this donor, right? So it's, and I think this might be an area where you and I have differing opinion, which is fine, right? It's America. Is that, correct me if I'm not remembering this correctly. I'm like, yeah, so for a donor like this, and especially if I don't have anybody else working with me, I can't ignore the fact that he needs the details, right? So I'll manage it. I'll work harder. And it's really painful, but I have to do it. I know what it was. Because we were talking about, I'm all about picking up the phone and just talking to people. Mm. And when we can get out there and visit, right? And you were saying, well, I don't really like picking up the phone. And I'm like, well, dude, so what? You need to pick up the phone.
And dude back. So yes, you do. I don't say, then don't pick up the phone. I say, all things equal, do what's most comfortable for you because you'll do it best and most often. If you are someone who really hates the phone and someone else says you must pick up the phone, there are people who say that's the way to do it. You got to pick up the phone. And I disagree. First of all, your introverted donors aren't going to want to pick up the phone on their end. You're assuming everyone wants a phone call. For every one of us who doesn't want to make a phone call, there's someone who doesn't want to get one. Okay. But if that's the way to communicate, it is. Once I know what my donors, what they prefer, it's easier for me. Because part of me, since I'm the very feelings-oriented, touchy-feely, sensitive one, is I don't want to call people and disturb them. I would feel awful if I did that, and I'd feel bad and take it personally if they were really gruff with me on the phone or something. So if I've pre-screened them, if you will, and I know they want to hear from me by phone, it's easier for me. Okay. See, if you're an objective, extroverted person, it wouldn't bother you. You would be able to say, okay, this person didn't want to talk to me. Fine. I'm on to the next. Doesn't work that way for me. I cannot take the subjective out of that, no matter how hard I try. One of the things I tell you have to remember all the time is it's not about you, right? I have to remind myself of that constantly, being a kindred spirit. So I'm not saying don't do that. I'm saying all things equal, do what's best for you. And you've got to sometimes figure out your role based on that. So yeah, let's take a local fundraising position versus a national one. In a local position, I can spend more time face-to-face with donors, and I'd rather just get out there and have a cup of coffee than speak on the phone. If you're a regional officer working out of the Boston area for a national or international university, and your region is the Southwest, you're going to have to make more calls. Yes, you can use email a lot, and I love email. It's been my best friend for 25 years now, but you will have to make more calls. So you have to figure that out. And if you go to a place that's got a lot of special events, you're going to have to, right? You may not want to do that if you're an introvert, or you may want to play a role, just the planning role in a special event if you're a mission controller. So partially it's going where you're going to fit best. Partially it's doing what's most comfortable for you, all things equal. And it's partially understanding your job and doing what's asked of you, whether it's comfortable or not. And we all have pieces of our work that aren't comfortable. So it is more nuanced than that, dude. But my job in the world as a head of asking matters and with the asking styles is to make it easier and help people be more comfortable. And so, most fundraisers are not really experienced. Board members generally aren't. Every organization has a board. That means 10 to 25 or who knows how many mostly unseasoned fundraisers who need to weigh in. But very few people get training. Most organizations in the United States have a budget under $1 million. So most fundraisers are greener than not. Those are the people I want to talk to and help to understand how they can do this well. I think that all the major gift officers at a major fancy major university at an Ivy League school can always hone their skills. And I think the asking styles are helpful to them too. But if you're the type who's already, met with hundreds of donors and made thousands of calls and emails and such, then you probably have most of the tools. I'm speaking to the vast majority of the world that isn't that. So I think we have to talk differently to different groups. And when I go to a conference and I'm leading an upper level class for very mature fundraisers, I would say things differently. But my platform isn't, and my audience is not as much them because they don't need as much of my help.
So you think?
So I think, well, I'm not saying that they all have all the tools. I've seen many who don't, but the trends are more that way.
Yeah.
The big places have a lot more money for training. They spend a lot. You and I know, right? It's hard for the small organizations to find the money or to get their boards to approve the money or whatever it is for training. The big organizations do spend it. So
A good segue. Segue to promote, some shameless plugging here. So you have all this amazing content you developed, and a gift and skill set of being able to deliver it both online and through you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the website. Is there explain what, how can
well, you stop? Sure. So I have a membership. It's only opens a couple of times a year. It last opened in September, and I just haven't done the whole marketing spiel to open it again, but I will soon. And if you go to my site and get on the newsletter list or something, you'd hear about it. I do webinars from time to time. I do webinars on the charity how-to platform on a number of different topics, like amazingly successful asks and this and that. I'm starting one that actually, it's the week after next, a new one on building a major gift program from scratch. What do you do if you're a small organization? You're not going to have some big fancy program with lots of major gift officers, but what can you do in 2 hours a week? So I do webinars like that. I do coaching, I do consulting, I do board training in person. I do staff training, everything having to do with the art and science of asking face-to-face, which today, of course, is strange, but we will get back to it. And almost everything that's applicable to doing it face-to-face would be applicable to doing it by phone, email, Skype, whatever you're using today to do more of that communication. So it's that and boards, getting the boards working, which is so important. So that's Asking Matters and what I do.
You have a couple of books too, right? You have a couple of books too?
Yes. Well, I have one book, Asking Styles Revolutionize Your Fundraising, which came out almost 2 years ago. And my second book on boards and asking styles will be out in August. So it's using the asking styles as a roadmap. What does it mean for leadership? What does it mean if your leader is a mission controller or whatever? What does it mean for recruitment? What does it mean for the camaraderie on your board? How do you develop camaraderie based on the asking styles? How do you make sure everyone's voice is heard? Really cool stuff that I've been thinking about. Second book coming out and lots of free stuff. And Joe, everyone should know, is one of my four Asking Matters topic experts. Joe is an expert on planned giving, as you all know. That's why you're listening here. And he's also a great trainer. He's a great trainer. And so he's taught me a lot, and we lean on him sometimes to talk about how to do training. So
it's just like we rehearsed. Very well said. Thank you.
And anyway, so we have lots of free materials there, a whole bunch of videos I shot. They're a few years old now. I have more gray hair than you will find in them.
Better to have gray hair than no hair.
This is true. And also a great series. I'm sure most of the people listening will know the name Jerry Panis, who was the pantheon in our field, who died at 90 almost 2 years ago. He and I sat down, it turned out to be the last year of his life, and we made audio tapes like ours here today, Joe. Over a number of months, I went up to his home, sat at his kitchen table with him, and we talked about all these topics. And those are all up on my website and actually are being reeled out through my newsletter starting Monday as well, one a month. There are 15 of them. So those are all really cool resources that you can grab onto. Lots of recordings of various fundraising masters I've had, I've hosted, all the names, you know, and anything to help people have an incredible impact in our wonderful, wonderful, and today hurting so terribly nonprofit world.
Mm. Good stuff. Well, that's not good stuff. Everything else before you
say. Yes. Yes.
Asking Matters, plural, MATURS.com.
Yes.
If they want to get in touch with you, Brian at askingmatters.com.
Yes.
Don't call him. He doesn't want to talk on the phone. Email him.
You can't even find my phone number. Try to.
Webpages Premium. I'm going to look that up. Ryan, thank you so much. As always,
thank you, Joe.
Value.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone who is listening, for being a part of our nonprofit community.
Indeed.
Appreciate it.
And stay hopeful. It's my
yes.
Phrase. Stay hopeful.
Indeed. Take care, Joe.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.